You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
All right, well, I think we're going to get started. It's 2:15. We might have a few people straggling in, but we wanted to just go ahead and get started. I'm just going to open us in a word of prayer, and then we'll get started. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for ACBC. Thank you so much for each one here and for their passion for biblical truth and for coming alongside those who need to hear the truth and how your word is sufficient for every issue that they have. And so, Lord, I just pray for our time together today. Thank you for the work that we are privileged to be able to do at Alliance Defending Freedom, and I pray that it would be an encouragement to these folks. I pray for this time, and we give it all to you. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Well, I wanted to introduce ourselves. I'm Kirsten Snary. I am a regional director with our Church and Ministry Alliance team, and we'll get a little bit more into who we are and what we do, but I am on one of our teams. It's the Church and Ministry team, and I'm going to let her introduce herself.
Yes. My name is Rachel Satoris, and I work on our Center for Conscience Initiative, so I'm one of our attorneys at Alliance Defending Freedom, and we operate to ensure that people can live and work and profess their faith while they're running their businesses, and so that's kind of what we do. We have five different teams, so I don't know if we're going to cover that in a second, but
Yeah, several teams. So who has heard of Alliance Defending Freedom? Raise your hand if you have.
Oh, that's great.
A lot of people.
I'm glad to hear that you've heard of it. So the goal of our presentation today is we're just going to go over a little bit of the legal landscape of what is going on and how it can be affecting you all, how it is affecting churches, ministries, counseling, all of that. And then we're going to go through a ton of cases, and I promise that we will give you some hope. It might be a little bit depressing and a little bit hard to hear at some of it, but I want to make sure that you know that there is going to be hope. So just bear with us. Okay, so we are the world's largest religious liberty law firm. We were started in the 90s by over 30 major ministry leaders. And so we have here Dr. Dobson, Larry Burkett, James Kennedy, Alan Sears. We have a lot of people who were feeling like that they were being threatened. They were having their religious liberty issues were being affected. And the best example I can think of is like Dr. Bill Bright. He was CRU is what he is now. He's the leader of CRU. It was Campus Crusade. He was being kicked off college campuses because he was sharing his faith. And he was saying, but wait, this is the exact place where God has called us. Why isn't anyone standing up for this? And so they founded ADF to fight these legal battles, and they were saying we need to keep the door open for the gospel. And so just like back then they were facing these issues, we are obviously facing these issues today too, and we're just going to show you a little bit about that. But we want to make sure that we have freedom in our country, and so that's what we're doing. So I'm going to share a little video. This is just a short video, and it's just been recently put out, and I want to share you a little bit about who we are. I think you guys will enjoy this.
All I just wanted to do was just share the gospel, you know, share the good news with other people, and they came and stopped me.
I've been put in a position where I either stop doing what I love or communicate messages that violate my beliefs.
We really felt that there was a disparity in how we were being treated. Then also what we felt was inappropriate and tremendous overreach on the part of the government.
I was interrogated by police many times, and those hearings, they lasted about 13 hours.
It's different when I know that it's not fair. Even before I get to the track, I already know that I'm not going to get first place or maybe even second place.
These people portrayed us in such a negative light. But I think that's a great program to have a government to dismiss us. It is punishment. Not fair to us, not fair to the kids, not fair to this community.
Every generation has a battle to fight. Our ancestors willingly endured, persevered, and overcame extreme trials to leave us an inheritance of freedom. Today, we're facing an unprecedented challenge. We're safer and richer than ever before. But we're living in a culture that has rejected the very foundations upon which our liberty was built. Freedom cannot survive in a culture that has abandoned truth and rejected reality. This is the battle of our generation. Wherever human freedom is under attack, we stand ready to defend it. Both at home and around the world, in courtrooms, legislatures, and the public square, you'll find us on the front lines. This is why Alliance Defending Freedom exists.
The Arizona Supreme Court ruled in favor of a pair of Christian artists.
The Finland court dismissed all charges of hate speech.
The Supreme Court sides with a former student of Georgia Gwinnett College. Nevada Church is scoring a major victory in court.
Louisville wedding photographer has won her federal lawsuit.
We must protect Title IX and women's sports for the next generation.
Parents don't lose their constitutional rights when they enroll their children in public schools.
The principle established in the state will go a long way for both free speech and religious freedom.
Powerful Christian legal organization has been planning a strategy to overturn Roe v. Wade. Their plan worked.
ADF is one team, a part of a broader alliance. We are Christ-centered. We are committed to selfless service and stewardship of our resources. We are committed to excellence. We are committed to victory. We equip and empower the leaders of today and tomorrow. Together, we work to build a future in which the law affirms and protects religious freedom, free speech, the sanctity of life, marriage, and the family. But we're not just here to hold our ground. We're not just here to stop the erosion of liberty for this moment alone. We are here to keep the door open for the gospel. And when the gospel does its work, truth doesn't just hold its ground. It advances. It sets people free. Generations to come. This is our mission at Alliance Defending Freedom.
Oops.
All I just wanted to.
Okay, sorry about that. So we have a strategy at ADF, and so we want to match the intensity of this battle. And so we do that in three ways. We litigate, especially when it comes to religious liberty and organizations that are being treated worse than their secular counterparts. And then we legislate. We have a legislative team that has put together over 72 model bills. 21 have been signed into law recently. And then we engage. We want to encourage those who are the body of Christ to just stand up and have a voice for truth and for freedom. And so we also just need to pray, and that's the main thing we want to ask people to do is pray. And if we faithfully do these things, we believe that we can change law and culture for generations to come. Do you want to tell a little bit about the difference between litigation and in this?
Yeah,
place?
Sure. Yeah. So this is also with the different strategies that we have at Alliance Defending Freedom, we do like litigation and legislation, but a lot of the things that we do with the difference between legislation and the litigation is that, I just want to make sure this thing is picking me up. We have a legislative team, so when we feel like there's an issue that needs to be discussed or professed in different states, we will create model bills and then encourage state legislatures to pass them, and then we defend these laws when they come up. So a lot of the sports cases, a lot of the women's sports issues, we created model bills that said only biological females can compete in women's sports, and then when they were challenged by the ACLU in the states, then we then went and defended these cases in West Virginia. One of the places that we did that was in the Dobbs case, the case that overturned Roe v. Wade. We instituted this model bill that said that there could be no abortions post 15 weeks after conception. So that really challenged the viability law, and we were able to get this law instituted, and then we argued it all the way up to the Supreme Court and overturned Roe v. Wade. So that's the strategy that we had, and it is actually working towards overturning some of these laws and changing really the political culture in America. So that was a very encouraging win this past summer.
Yeah. So we have a lot of different teams. We have a life team. We have a conscience team. We have a parental rights team.
I happen to be part of the church and ministry team. And so as a church on our team, we have this verse, 1 Corinthians 12:26, and it's the one where Paul's saying, when one member suffers, we all suffer. When one rejoices, we all rejoice. And we know that Paul was talking about the body of Christ at that time. He did not have the idea of the American judicial system at the time. But we all know that the same principle applies when it comes to precedent. So what we wanted to make sure everyone knows is that when one church or one ministry or one counselor has an issue and they have a lawsuit possibly and it goes up the court levels, maybe even into the Supreme Court, and you win, that is a win for every other church and ministry. And the same goes if you lose. So we are really, we are more interested in legal precedent than, you know, settling a case. Whereas I know some people have said, oh, I have insurance or something. That is more, they are really interested in settling. They're thinking about the bottom line. We are really interested in precedent and making sure that every church matters, every voice matters. Okay, so we all know this to be true. Who knows that culture's changing? We've all seen it. You guys are seeing it on the front lines every day, right? So not only is it is changing very rapidly, very quickly, and you can see how when culture changes, that impacts the way that we are able to do ministry, right? And so as I go through, I'm going to go through several legal categories, and as I go through these, I want you to think of two things. Think of these categories and these cases through the lens of two things. One, every issue is a spiritual issue. First of all, our enemy hates what you're doing, what we, the body of Christ, is doing, because we have the answers to everything that is going on in culture and that is a problem in culture, right? And so the enemy hates that. So we are not fighting against flesh and blood, but against a spiritual enemy. And secondly, I want you to picture yourself in either the case as the client or as the counselor, as the pastor of someone sitting out in your denomination or your pews. So just think of it in those two lenses as we go through some of these. So I just bring this up and I just show this as an example just because it gives a good example of how culture is changing. CNN did an article on this family recently, and this is Ian Jenkins and his partners, Alan and Jeremy, and they're a throuple. I did not know that that was a thing, actually, but it's considered a polyamorous relationship, and they fought a very hefty, big lawsuit in California to get all three parents on this baby's birth certificate, and they won. And so I don't bring this up to mock or to condemn. I'm bringing this up because this is our culture, and you know, when Jesus said the harvest is plenty and the workers are few, we, as the body of Christ, every single one of us, are workers in this harvest. And so we just need to be praying for our culture, praying for our impact, and I just wanted to bring that up as an example of how culture is changing right now.
So one of the biggest ways that culture is changing, and obviously she was just showing like a polyamorous relationship, is the protection of sexual orientation and gender identity, and trying to make these protected classes in the federal law and in state laws and local and regionally. So the reason that these laws are being mainly changed in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. So that was originally created to protect against racism in 1964, was the Civil Rights Act, and people were being racist towards members of the African American community, couldn't like cross state lines because there was nowhere to stay. So that they were heightened to a protected class as your race, national origin, sex, and sex means male and female. In 1964, that's what they meant by sex. And so what the strategy here is to change the definition of sex to not be male and female, but to include sexual orientation and gender identity. And so if that's basically what the Equality Act does. It heightens the level of sexual orientation and gender identity to a protected class. And so in all federal law where it says sex, that would also include people, and we say SOGI. It's like in the SOGI comparator here. So really what that ends up happening, like we just saw that in Title IX. So Title IX has just been redefined to include sexual orientation and gender identity, which now means that males can compete on females' teams, they can go into the girls' locker rooms, they can go into the girls' restrooms, and so that's how we're seeing this play out in this moment. So That is one of the biggest ways that people are trying to denigrate these rights that women have. And so that's also a big target on the back of religious individuals who want to protect, who want to live out their religious beliefs, believing that God created us male and female and that marriage is between a man and a woman. And so one of these big ways is in the public accommodations law in 1964, if you expand that to sexual orientation and gender identity, now if you hold yourself out to the public, you can't decline someone because they're in a same-sex relationship or because they identify as a different gender. And so we really saw that in the case of Jack Phillips. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with Jack Phillips, but he was the cake artist in Colorado who declined to create the same-sex wedding cake. And so, as you know, Jack serves all people, but he just declines to create all messages. It really had to do with the message that was being conveyed, not the people who were asking for it. He declines to create Halloween cakes, divorce cakes, bachelorette, bachelor party cakes, anything that denigrates someone else. And so when the same-sex couple came into his shop, he said, oh, I can't create a custom wedding cake for you, but I can give you this store-bought cake, I can make you cupcakes, cookies, really anything, but I'm not going to use my artistic talents the Lord gave me to celebrate something I disagree with. So they sued him, and the case went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and he won. But on the day, Jack's story is just literally ongoing. I don't know how long Jack's going to be in these litigation, but he's in his third suit right now. On the day that the Supreme Court said that they would hear his case, another attorney called him and said, would you create a birthday cake for me? It's blue on the outside and pink on the inside. And Jack's like, I'm sure we can do that. And they're like, well, that's to celebrate my gender transition. He's like, I'm not sure if that's a cake that we can create. We end up settling with the commission, and then that attorney sued him directly. So that's his third suit that he's been dealing with. We went to trial last year, and he actually is going to the Colorado Appeals Court tomorrow, so you can be in prayer for that, for Jack, because he's been in litigation for a decade now. And so one of the law that they sued Jack under, this anti-discrimination law, it heightened the level of sexual orientation and gender identity to the level of a protected class, and so he had to be forced to serve. Well, he serves everyone, but forced to create this message he disagrees with. So we wanted to come and attack that law, and so we took on Lori Smith, who was a website designer. Her website designer business is called 303 Creative, and she didn't want to be forced to create a wedding website that celebrated same-sex marriages. This case, we lost all the way up. This is our team motto, is that we win by losing. So we lose, 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 lose. We get to the Supreme Court, and we win, and that's generally how we always say win by losing. But Lori's case is going to the Supreme Court this fall, and we're hopeful that the court will find that Lori can continue to serve everyone, just not be forced to violate her religious convictions, because really she either has to do that, she has to not operate her business, or she has to close her business, basically, or suffer these heavy penalties. And so no one should be forced to create a message they disagree with. The Tenth Circuit ruled against her, and so now, yeah, we're at the Supreme Court this fall.
Yes. This is another accommodation one. So this one is the Downtown Hope Sitter in Anchorage, Alaska, and they serve the homeless during the day, and at night they turn into a women's shelter. And this gal, Cheryl, she's the owner of this place, and what happened is one night a man came to their center, and the women are in there because they clear out the eating area, and they have cots like 3 feet away from each other. And so this man came to the door in a pink robe, pink suitcase, big gash down his forehead, and he was drunk. And so she came to the door, and she said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. But the women were all sitting there waiting. Every single woman in their shelter has been sexually abused or abused in some way, sometimes trafficked. They're all in a bad place. And so they were all watching to see what is going to happen. Is she going to let him in or not? Because if she lets him in, we are going to go back to the streets, and that would have been very unsafe for them. Well, what she did is she got help for him. She got him transportation to get medical help because he had this big gash on his forehead. Well, they ended up getting sued. And because he said it was a public accommodation and he should be allowed in there as an identified woman. What happened is that the city did end up deciding to settle, and they realized they were going to lose, and so they did dismiss, and they actually had to pay $100,000 in attorney fees to ADF, which was good. But what does this mean for places like this? Does it mean we have to shut down or serve the people that God has called us to serve? And so that's the issue that we're dealing with in a lot of these cases. Here's another one, New Hope Family Services. They are an adoption agency, and the interesting thing is they weren't even doing anything wrong, but someone went through, looked and found their statement of faith, said that it showed that they had a biblical view of family, marriage and family, and so they targeted them and said, we are going to shut you down if you're not going to allow same-sex couples to adopt. But they just have a good ministry and a good heart for children, and so we just won this case. Do you want to share a little bit about
it? Oh, sure,
it?
Yeah. Yeah, just a few weeks ago, actually, a district court issued a permanent injunction, which means that the state of New York can't close them down because of their religious beliefs. They can continue to place kids according to couples who are married, a married man and woman, which is how they wanted to operate their business. And they also weren't receiving any federal funding either. So it's not like they were receiving federal funds and not placing children with same-sex couples. They are a private organization. And they placed homes according to their children in homes according to their religious beliefs. So it means now that New Hope can continue to serve the community, so then kids can find permanent homes. I mean, the foster and adoption care industry is so needing homes, and it's we're now just going to close some down because we don't agree with their religious beliefs. Just feels to be antithetical to the real purpose that we're doing here. Mm-hmm. So that was a great win. We're very excited about that. This was another case, and this kind of ties it into the counselors. I'm sure we were giving a lot of information, and like, how does this apply to you and what you do as a licensed biblical counselor or a counselor or anything in that mental health space? But so this Fort Des Moines Church of Christ, so with a public accommodation, if you're a restaurant and you hold yourself open to the public, you're a public accommodation. That was always the purpose of it, to be basic necessities for people to have, like hotels, restaurants, different inventory stores, like, I don't know, clothing stores and things like that. They were never really meant to encapsulate every single thing that people, like these creative businesses, which is why we defend a lot of people who are in this creative space. So a lot of times, if the law of what is defined as a public accommodation is so broad, it can even encapsulate sometimes churches, and then now you are forced to violate your religious beliefs and provide services to people. Well, we serve everyone again, but just this one was that the church would be forced to open up their restrooms and their facilities to people of an opposite sex if they identified it as a different gender. And so this church, this law in Iowa was so broad that it said that churches could not express their views on human sexuality if it directly or indirectly made persons of a particular gender identity feel unwelcome. And it was incredibly vague on what does directly or indirectly mean? What does unwelcome mean? Anybody can feel unwelcome in any moment. So it doesn't really, it was a very ill-defined rule. And so the ban could have silenced churches and even extended to the pastor's sermon on biblical sexuality. And that is an incredibly big problem because churches need to be able to speak according to their religious beliefs. And so we represented this church as it challenged their ban and how it applied to churches. And the court ruled that churches are not places of public accommodation. So, I mean, it's a great ruling in that church isn't included in this law, but that still means that there's plenty of other businesses that are encapsulated by this. And many people I know at this conference aren't licensed counselors, are more biblically certified under ACBC. And a lot of I believe that underneath the churches, and you're doing your counseling through the churches. So generally that will be protected the closer that you are to the church. Like if you are a pastor and you are only serving people who are members of your church and doing counseling, not for a fee, that will most likely be protected. But the more tangentially related you get to that, the more in danger it is that you could fall prey to some of these different types of laws. So if you're a nonprofit organization and you're just a biblically licensed certified counselor and you're not actually licensed by the state, there's going to be more opportunity for you to fall prey to some of these public accommodations laws. Are you serving everyone that walks in the door, or do you have like a membership with a church? And there's different tiers of protections as you get further out. So if you're really just catering to the people in your church, then that's probably fine. And it really is just is. And we want to really encourage people who are in these situations, like counselors, biblical certified counselors, any of that, to reach out to us if you have a question of, is this law going to impact me? Am I going to be endangered by this? And I think ACBC does a great job at making sure everyone's protected, but I do think just to have the personal onus to make sure, what are the laws in my area? Are things changing? Because things are changing rapidly around here. There are some laws that Usually they only apply to licensed counselors, but now it's being expanded to unlicensed counselors. There was a law in West Lafayette, Indiana, that was attempted to be passed. I know several people I spoke with it about this week already, that would have applied to licensed or unlicensed counselors that were engaging in any type of conversion therapy, they call it. So anything that you encourage someone to align with your biological gender. And you could be fined for that if you helped a minor do that. And so we're seeing more and more of these unlicensed rules. There's one in Pima County, Arizona. I think I'm getting a little ahead of myself for later, but that's fine. I just wanted to convey that while a lot of you might be protected, just to have that personal onus of making sure that you are, just because it's way easier to have proactive steps than to be on the defensive and you're being sued for something that you shouldn't be forced to do. So that kind of wraps that up a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, and this is more about what you're going to talk about. Yeah.
Well, I think this is kind of what I was just talking about. So there's different counseling bans, and they really apply differently to whether you're licensed or unlicensed. Most of these counseling bans are towards licensed counselors, kind of like I was just saying. There are a few that target unlicensed counselors, but sexual orientation, change efforts, conversion therapy, reparative therapy, all just synonyms for the same thing, which is just a speech ban on what you can and cannot say. And really when these were passed in the states and in local laws, they weren't really being enforced as much. It was almost just like a way to silence everyone and to make you see that culture's changing, we're shifting, you can't push back on any of these things anymore. You kind of have to just shut up and just kind of go with the flow. I probably shouldn't have said that, but you just kind of have to go with the flow and see and not push back on what they're saying. So you can only affirm someone in their gender dysphoric feelings, and you can't really dig into what is causing these issues. And so that's kind of how these started, and we're seeing them, some of these laws play out dangerously with Brian Tingley. So in Washington, there's a law that says that licensed counselors cannot engage in any type of anything other than gender-affirming care, or they could be subject to fines. He was going to be subject to $20,000 fines every time he saw someone and encouraged them to really dig into, like, are you actually this gender identity that you feel? And so he helped people in Washington State for more than 20 years really, like, embrace their religious convictions. And under Brian's guidance, his clients have pursued meaningful and positive changes in their lives. And so, unfortunately, this case is not ended well. We're not done, but we lost in the Ninth Circuit, and there is positive precedent that said that the speech that people give in the Third Circuit, and this was in Florida, that speech would be protected. And so anytime you're speaking as a counselor, they said that would be protected. In the Ninth Circuit, this was in Washington State, so it's a little bit more liberal side of the country, and so we kind of anticipated that would be the result. But now that we have challenging precedents in different parts of the country, we're hopeful that we'll be able to take that maybe to the Supreme Court. And the really big issue is, if you're a private organization, you should be able to control what you say, how you counsel. This is your free speech, and you should be able to speak in a way that you feel like aligns with your religious beliefs. I guess I just have a little more. So this is Dr. David Schwartz. This is a case we took in New York City. He is a Jewish rabbi, and he has a practice where he helps a lot of people in this Jewish faith help them align their sexual orientation to the way that God has designed it so they can live in fruitful heterosexual marriages, and he was very successful at his job. But the city of New York said that you couldn't engage. This was also a sexual orientation change effort law that also applied to adults. Usually they only apply to minors, and that you couldn't engage in this type of therapy with minors, but this also encapsulated adults as well. So it's basically like the government was now saying that two adults can't sit in a room with each other behind a closed door and talk the way that they would like to talk, and that's against the law. So we took up the case, we challenged New York City, and they didn't just rescind the law, they also paid us attorney's fees. So I love this example because it feels like they will push so hard to get these laws in place, and the second that we push back and file a lawsuit, they're like, oh, just kidding, like, we know we can't actually do this, but we're going to keep pushing forward until people push back. So really encouraging everyone to take a stand and really, like, push back and be bold about some of these things, because it feels like they're just going to kind of railroad over our religious beliefs until we stop talking. So
yeah, you have another thing about that one is, yeah, the people that would come to him they were asking for help
to
avoid their same-sex attraction. They were saying, hey, I am a Jewish person. I believe in the Pentateuch, or, you know, the Torah. I want to live my life faithfully in the way, the biblical way of sexuality. And they were requesting it, and he was still trying to be shut down. So that was interesting about that part. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the cases we're discussing with counselors are really the only cases we have. There are very few. We have a lot of cases in a lot of other areas, but the counseling space is it's almost like a merging litigation space, because this is a lot of the other cases we have of Jack baking the cake. It's his artistic ability is what we deem his speech. And this is what you are doing with patients is literal speech. It's coming out of your mouth. And so it's an area that's ripe for litigation and for pushing back on some of these unconstitutional laws. So another one of those areas. So we covered kind of the public accommodation space, the reparative therapy, sexual orientation change efforts, like the counseling bans, and then this is licensure laws for counselors, which might not inherently relate to a lot of the people at this conference, I think, but it's important to discuss because these are the things that are still out there and what's happening in college graduate programs. So really, what can the state, there might be a lot of reasons why people aren't actually licensed by the states, and then you're not subject to some of these laws, but one of the big areas of licensure laws for counselors that comes from like the third party of the American Counseling Association. So they have their own code of ethics, and a lot of states have now integrated those code of ethics into their state law on how that they regulate the counseling profession. So in their code of ethics, originally it said that you could refer out to someone if you had an issue with someone's if it was based on your religious beliefs. So if you had a same-sex couple come to you and want premarital counseling, but you felt like you really couldn't speak on that because you believe marriage is between a man and a woman, that was originally allowed under the ACA's code of ethics. And so when Julia Ward went to the Eastern Michigan counseling program, she had like three courses left to go, and she had some students assigned to her, like some patients, before she could finish her graduate program, and one of them was in a same-sex relationship. So she went to her advisor and asked, is it okay if I counsel this person, and if something comes up with their same-sex relationship, I'll just refer them to someone else, or should I refer them at the outset without ever seeing this person? So she was more than happy to counsel this person. She just didn't want to speak on a same-sex relationship. And her advisor said, it was fine, you're allowed to refer out to someone else, so she did. And the school got livid and was very angry about it. They told her she would have to complete a remediation program and go through all these steps to make sure that she's changing her beliefs about what marriage is, and they were just very unhappy with it. So we took up her case, and they said, according to the ACA, she was allowed to refer out, and that's Eastern Michigan's counseling program had incorporated those ethics laws. So we won that case, and then immediately the ACA went and changed their code of ethics to say you can't refer out now for a value-based referral. So that's where the law stands in the ACA. There's 19 states that have incorporated that into their counseling laws, and so that's where we're excited to take apart that. We don't love the law, but we really are. That's our next case I think we want to bring, is challenging these licensure laws in these states, because now if you're a counselor in Iowa and you refer out to someone and they complain, you can just put a complaint in online. They could revoke your license, and the board would just be able to do that, and you would lose your license to counsel. So that's one of the big areas that we're looking to challenge some of this. So I know that might not inherently relate, but it's just kind of showing how there's a lot of speech restrictions in this area of your profession and kind of what you do. So just to be aware that these things are out there, and just making sure that you in your area are protected.
And what she was talking about, like, those are some of the preemptive cases that we do. We really we don't just wait for things to happen. I know that organizations like ACLU, they have sought out cases to try to challenge biblical beliefs, for instance. But that's where we didn't have anyone really doing that. And so ADF is really saying, you know what, why are they doing that and we're not doing that? We need to start standing up, seeing where bad law is, and challenging it. And so that's where we are so grateful for some of our clients who have really taken a stand. And I know it's been hard on them sometimes, and yet every single one of them has said, I have grown more in my faith and in my walk with the Lord in my community than ever when I've stood for truth. And so that's been pretty amazing to see that happen. One of the other areas of law that we see with churches and ministries is land use issues. And so some of these legal issues are when they affect a religious organization or a church in different ways than they do their secular counterpart. And they kind of treat them like subclass people. So church plants especially have been victims of this, and I'll give you an example of that and where it's clearly unconstitutional. Redemption Community Church, this is Jeremy, in the city of Laurel, Maryland, sent Redemption Community Church a letter telling them that they needed to stop holding worship services in their building that it owns. And so what had happened, oh, and if they didn't stop, they'd be charged $250 a day. And so what happened, we ended up representing him because they had purchased this property in the middle of town, and as soon as they had purchased the property, the city of Laurel changed their zoning. And so it would be okay to have a karaoke bar or to have any other thing like that going on in their city, but if you're singing religious songs, then you couldn't do that. You'd have to go through this really strange, like pricey and cumbersome exemption process. And so after filing this lawsuit, it prompted the officials to really understand that they were violating both federal and the First Amendment, federal law and the First Amendment. And so this church is now free to worship in their building. Government mandates, this is something that sometimes it's not just being told that you can't do something. Sometimes they're telling you you must do something. So these mandates are telling people they must do things that are against their religious. So, for instance, we had a case in California with three different churches. This is one of them, one pastor in Glendora, California. And what was happening is California was telling churches, all churches, that they needed to include abortion in their health care policies for their employees. And this very pro-life church was saying they couldn't imagine using tithe money that they would use to help pay for their employees' insurance. They couldn't. They just thought it was unconscionable. So we did take up a case with the state, and we just won that case recently. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just in the last month, this summer at least. This is just a graph showing the number of cases we had, 17 cases, and we helped over 3,200 churches and ministries during the COVID, the last few years. So whether it was mandates or other issues that were happening, and one, the best example I can think of is Calvary in Nevada. So when strip clubs and casinos were all opening up, and they were allowed at 50% capacity, which for some of those casinos is hundreds and hundreds of people, churches were still being limited to 50 people. And so we took up that case, and we won that, of course. But it was just they were being treated differently and had a different rule set of rules for them. And so that was just an example of one of the cases of those 17 during that time period. And then church and ministry employment. This is an area of law that is just not totally settled. And so we are seeing this in some cases. I'll show you the next one. But it's an area that we encourage churches and ministries to just make sure you're on a little bit more of the proactive side instead of the reactive. So, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. But we do see that many lawsuits are coming around for employees of the church, and not just the employees. Sometimes an employee is let go, and it could even be a spouse that starts to challenge the church or the ministry. So that's what we have been seeing. This is an example that's similar to another one we had in Seattle, and it's the Wyoming Rescue Mission, and they are they believe that the gospel is central to health and healing, which we all know to be true, and they believe that a changed life is a result of a changed heart. And so gospel is central to what they do, and so when someone came in as a self-proclaimed non-Christian wanting a job, they felt they had a right to say no. We want Christians to work at our organization, and yet they were sued. And so we want to make sure that they have the right to hire who they want to hire. And so that's one of the areas that we do help churches and ministries with, is just their policies on hiring and employments and job descriptions and all that. So that's where Church and Ministry Alliance came up. So we did have, someone mentioned HSLDA earlier, and so Mike Ferris started, is anyone familiar with Homeschool Legal Defense Fund Association? So Mike Ferris started that, and so after Obergefell in 2015, when same-sex marriages were legal in all 50 states, that case that came out, we were just inundated with calls and emails from churches and ministries saying, how do we make sure that we are protected, or what if we're being asked to do a wedding and it goes against our conscience and our beliefs? And so we just weren't prepared for the amount of people that were coming to us, and so we started a program, a membership for churches and ministries where we can help them be prepared for, instead of just being reactive, we could help them to be more proactive. And we wanted to do a couple things. We wanted every church and ministry to be protected, and we wanted every church and ministry to have access to attorneys, and we wanted to create an atmosphere for spiritual boldness to thrive. So we have a few benefits that I'll just go over briefly. And the first one is the document review. And most churches and ministries lack the proper documentation that they need. And so if you are a counselor or a biblical counselor under the ministry of your church, we want to make sure that that church is protected and is as prepared as it can be, just because that kind of covers you as well. So even the most conscientious ones usually have something missing. So what we do is we have you do a document review. You turn in everything, and we look at your policies and your procedures and your job descriptions. And then our attorneys will go over that with you, and they'll even make suggestions and recommendations on maybe some documents that you don't have. I've seen a lot of churches maybe not have a good policy use guide, and so or a policy like facilities use. So those are some things that they go through. They go through all of that with you, and just make sure that you're all buttoned up. And if you have done your documents recently and had them reviewed, great. If they are 10 years old, they're outdated. If they're 5 years old, they're probably outdated. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but even in 5 years, things have changed so drastically that you need to probably rethink what does your church say on marriage and sexuality and on gender and things like that, identity. So we help you with all that. And then one of the things that our attorneys talk about are the three C's. And they say you really do need to clearly communicate what you believe. Obviously, use scripture to do that. And then you need to create your core documents that portray those beliefs in writing, and then you need to be very consistent in the way you apply those. So those are our three C's of your documentation. And then the second benefit is unlimited attorney consultation or access to our attorney. So, I mean, if you have things come up any day, like we had a church in the Bible Belt call, small little church, and they had two job openings. They had one for a music minister and one for a children's director. And a same-sex couple came and applied for both of those positions. And they called and said, we're not sure how to handle this. Like, I feel like we might be being targeted. And so just you can call every day if you want. I know you won't, but you have the ability to call us all the time anytime something comes up. And then you can email them, call them, whatever. And then there's no limit to that, and you don't get charged fees for that. It's just part of benefits. And then specialized resources. Like I mentioned with the documentation, we even have sample documents or templates on here. Like I mentioned, a facilities use policy. We have a sample document that you can download, and you can enter your information and make it fit your church or ministry. But we also have podcasts and case reviews and legal guides and all sorts of information that is available specifically for our members. And then when things come up, we often send out an email blast to all of our members saying, hey, this is something that has just come down. We want to make sure you all are aware. So it's just a way of growing an alliance of like-minded, Bible-believing churches and ministries to know what's going on out there so that we can all stand for spiritual boldness. Because I think there are too many pastors who are so good-hearted, but they're saying, ooh, I don't want to step on toes. And we were saying, no, this is what, if we don't take a stand on this, the enemy is so crafty. Look at the words gender affirming. That's such a kind, affirming is such a kind word. And that's just the exact opposite of God's intent. It's just, it's the enemy's just using confusing words and confusing languages. And it just makes me think of, what is it, Isaiah 5:20, where it talks about, you know, they're going to call good evil and evil good. Like, that's exactly what's happening. And we're just trying to help equip our churches and ministries in these things. Oops, did I go back? Did I go too far? And then legal representation. So if necessary and appropriate, and you or your church or your ministry finds yourself in a situation where you need to be represented, like I mentioned before, it's not insurance. We care more about the precedent than anything else. So we will represent you. If you lose, we'll appeal. We'll keep going, even if it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, which could cost so much money. But we're able to do what we do because of our amazing ministry friends who also keep the cost down of this membership. And then just, again, every ministry matters. It just takes one. So I'm just going to give you a little bit of information here on the pricing for a church. And, you know, the majority of our churches fall in that up to 150 to 150 to 500. Like, that is the average weekly attendance. And if you look at the cost of that, there's the monthly cost or the annual cost. It is almost ridiculous. Like, you need to do that. You need to make sure we can help you with that. And then this is our ministry. It's based on revenue. It's not an average weekly attendance. It's just based on revenue. So if you have a ministry, whether it's a Christian school, whatever, this is the annual price for those. And then just a little to let you know, if you have an issue or something that's going on that is maybe outside of our scope of services. So we are the world's largest religious liberty law firm. So that is kind of our specialty. The five things we mainly work on are freedom of speech, freedom of religion, parental rights, sanctity of life, and sanctity of marriage. Those are the five big things that we really work on. And if something's outside of that scope of service, we have over 4,000 allied attorneys that we can possibly refer you to. Say it's a slip and fall or a tax issue or a land issue that maybe isn't really in our expertise, we can refer out to an allied attorney. In fact, we have an allied attorney here in our midst right now, Deborah. But we do have, you know, like I have a friend who broke his thumb recently. And he said, I didn't just go to an orthopedic and I didn't just go to a hand specialist. I actually went to a thumb specialist. Like, you want the best religious liberty attorneys when you have an issue. So if something's outside of our scope, we have these allied attorneys. And then we have played a major role in over 65 Supreme Court victories since 2011. We've had 13, this actually just went to 14, right? 14, I'm sorry, Supreme Court cases we've individually won those since 2011. And then we have won over 80% of all of our cases, and God has truly blessed our work. And we as an organization refer to John 15:5 daily. We literally, it's across our wall. When I walk in, we look at it, we talk about it all the time, and it's apart from Christ, we can do nothing. And we know it's only by the grace of God that we have had the success we've had, and through prayer and through support, and that's how. And then on the flip side, you know, Philippians 4:13, we know we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. So,
Did you want to go to this?
No, go for it.
I also wanted to just mention something that I was looking at my notes and forgot to mention earlier because there was no slide for it. So back with the counseling licensing issues, I just wanted to make sure that I noted this also. With not being licensed by the state, which I know a lot are like ACBC certified counselors, just ensuring that in your state you are allowed to operate. Let's say you're in a nonprofit, but there is a rule against holding yourself out as a counselor and you're performing counseling services, but you're not actually licensed by the state. So Arizona has one. So we went and we counseled this one group of biblical counselors, certified biblical counselors through ACBC, but they weren't attached to a church. They weren't really related to a ministry. It was really just kind of their own nonprofit ministry, and they were kind of holding themselves out as though they were licensed counselors, and they weren't. And so that would have been not okay under Arizona's law. So just making sure that you know what your state requires for you to be, how you need to be licensed, how do you need to hold yourself out to the public? Are you protected under your church? What level out ring are you? Are you just like directly under the pastor and they only serve people who are in the church, or are you serving people who come from the outside of the church? It kind of just, I don't know every law in every state in this moment, but that's something I could look at if that you had a specific question. But just to make sure that you personally aren't going to be held liable because you're operating as a counselor when you're really not licensed by the state. And so that I do think is something that we are going to end up challenging in the next few years, is some of these licensing requirements, because I know that there's not a desire to, like, now that each state requires you to be licensed for even hair braiding. Those are some of the cases we have, like economic liberty. There's some other allies we have that do that, like hair braiding or eyebrow threading. You need to be licensed, but if you're licensed, now you have to follow all these rules. So is it actually constitutional to force someone to be licensed to do these types of law, these types of professions? That's just its own question to the side. So there's a case that's actually going on in DC. It's not one of our own cases, but It came up with COVID because she saw someone that was in Virginia, but they were always in person. But now that she lived in Virginia and her counselor, her patient was in DC, she was now doing telehealth across state lines, and now she'd have to be licensed by DC. But there's all these DC regulations that are much more unconstitutional. So she didn't want, she's like, now you're limiting my practice because I can't drive to DC anymore. And so these are kind of these licensing issues. So I just wanted to bring that up, and hopefully one day we'll maybe have more protection in that regard. But I didn't want to interrupt you. Just wanted to mention
that's
that.
Fine. So. No, that's great. So on this next page, I have a free ebook that I can email you. I put a little card in that the pamphlet that you have there. There's a card there. If you want to give me your email address, your name and email, I can email you this free ebook. That's just 11 ways to prepare your ministry, just to give you some good tips for helping your ministry and knowing how you can be better prepared. And then here's a QR code. If you wanted to set up a meeting at all, you're welcome to do that, or you can just call or email me. And then our next slide is for Rachel. If you have legal issues that you want to talk to her about as a counselor, you can reach out to Rachel as well.
Yeah, and I have some business cards back there too. So
yeah. Yeah. Do we have any questions? Does anyone have any questions?
Like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you necessarily don't have to be part of a ministry to fill this out?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, I can send that to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Even as an individual, I can send it to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
Or I could give it to you for your church. Mm-hmm. Yes.
On the prices for the ministry's revenue, is that annual or monthly?
That's an annual price. Well, I think it has
ministry. It just says ministry ally pricing. It's just a number.
But oh, then that's annual. Okay.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
annual. Yeah,
I know that's annual.
Yeah, that is annual.
Yeah. My mom has a ministry and she's part of ADF, but I know that she's not. They're not making a lot of money, so you know, it's new. It's a new ministry. We're still growing.
Yeah.
I have one other question.
Yeah.
This might be a little bit too specific, but what would you recommend? Just some basic steps of protection that a standalone ministry could take. Like, for instance, we are a separate 501c3
okay.
biblical counseling center. We operate through the hub church model. So we're not actually a ministry of our hub church, but
right.
all of our employees are hired by the church. Mm. We do take in outside.
Yeah. Mm. There were some forms that I know that they were using. They've talked about that would be a great one for the
yes.
attorneys on the church and ministry team. They would be better to help you with that. I would recommend the Ministry Alliance, but they do help you with all of those policies and those documentations. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? Come to the booth too. I mainly brought church ones because it seems like there's mostly churches here, but I do have four 501c3 ministries. I have a Ministry Alliance brochure
okay,
that's separate. So yeah, right,
so
I can get that for you.
So I guess we'll
that's
be.
That's for church,
okay.
but yeah. You yeah. can find Ministry Alliance if you look for it, but I have an actual one.
I'm also a pastor at that other church as well.
You're a pastor? Well, then keep the
yeah,
church
so
one, and I'll give
both.
You a ministry
yeah.
too.
You've got double the things.
Exactly. Yes.
went through all of our documents for the counseling with an attorney.
Okay.
I don't know all of his experience with it, but in general, is this an area that's more nuanced and you would assume that just your average attorney, like, is this too much for them to generally know, or is it pretty well out there that general counsel covers all of it?
So you had, like, an outside attorney that doesn't do religious liberty. It's just kind of like a general attorney, the general counsel?
Right. Yeah,
okay.
He's referred to us through a ministry.
Okay.
If this
yeah.
is more nuanced than most have.
Yeah, I would... I mean, I would say it's more nuanced because, I mean, all I do all day in and day out is look at some of these restrictions for religious liberty issues, and I still, like, I mean, my supervisor's constantly telling me more and more. So it's like there's things are changing at such a rapid rate. Maybe 10 years ago it would have been fine to just have a general person, a general attorney, but because that's all we do all the time, I would really suggest seeing someone because they know exactly what to look for because we have cases that have shown, like, if you do this wording, if you phrase it this way and we're framing it in such a way, it's not – that sounds like we're, like, making it up. We're being completely honest with the way that we regulate because the secular world doesn't understand that this is a ministry and every single person we hire is, like, a purposeful hire, and that's the reason we're doing that. And so a lot of our cases, we come up against secular individuals and we have these depositions and – they're like, okay, well, which one of our, for just as an example, because it was kind of funny, we had a photographer and he was asking, she was saying that her photos are an expression of her religious beliefs and he was, and of her religious beliefs about marriage between a man and a woman. And he said, well, where in the Bible do you get instructed that, like, that marriage is between a man and a woman? And she's like, the entire Bible is like an expression of like God's relationship with us. And she went from like Genesis and she said all this stuff and literally his mind looked like it was going to explode because he doesn't understand. He's like, the entire Bible informs your belief about marriage. She's like, yes, the entire Bible. So I think people who are, maybe they're a Christian attorney, but they don't actually aren't in this area. It's just very specific. And we know all of, we just have more experience working on it. So yeah.
Almost like that thumb specialist. Any other okay. questions? Yes.
Just to interject, informed consent is very important for biblical counseling. To have a form and explain clearly what you do, mm-hmm. the biblical basis, and what you don't do. You mm-hmm.
Right.
And agrees to a biblical dispute resolution in the event of a conflict.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, yes, sir.
So I have also a nonprofit, mm-hmm. a standalone ministry. Mm-hmm. It's focused mostly on education and training versus
okay.
counseling.
Mm-hmm.
But we use all the biblical counseling principles and mm-hmm. so forth mm-hmm. that we learned through ACPC. We're trying to increase our, we're planning to increase our presence online mm-hmm. as well as social media space.
Mm-hmm.
Any advice on being careful in that area of what to do to make sure that we don't, because again, once you get out on, when mm-hmm. once you're in the, on the web, you're open to everybody.
You're like subject to a bunch mm-hmm. of people
right.
who are going to, what state do you operate out of?
Alabama.
Alabama, okay. Yeah, I guess I would say just to ensure that you look at the I mean, it sounds like you're protected in the way that you run your business because you're running a nonprofit that's not actually counseling. So I assume you're not holding yourself out as a counselor. You're a teacher or a coach or what I forgot the word you used. But just to make sure, I think running through your documents, making sure, like she was saying, through the Church and Ministry Alliance, just to make sure everything's protected. I mean, you don't have to go through us, but just making sure that you have everything in ducks in a row, that if somebody comes, because a lot of, I think, we're in this space so much, so it's hard to think that not everybody is out there looking to sue everyone,
right.
but there are people that are looking for biblically based creative professionals or professionals to like cause a ruckus and try to sue people just for the fun of it. And so I think I would just make sure that all of that is in a row before you go public, and then you can almost become a target for some of those things. But it sounds like you were running your business in a way that's not violating any of those laws. So I guess I would just make sure that's all protected. Do you have any?
Yeah, I was just going to say, too, I mean, I'm not an attorney, and Rachel is, but I have heard our attorneys in our church and ministry team say, especially to like schools and stuff, make sure that you put on there that you are a religious organization. If you are going to be a religious organization, make sure it's obvious. Mm-hmm. Be clear about that, because
kind of in our name.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is it? Okay. Well, then that's good. Yeah.
There you go.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you all for coming, and feel free to come by our booth if you have any other questions. We're kind of down towards the coffee. And we have Ministry Alliance information. I just brought church, but if you want to fill out that form and I can email you that ebook, you can either give it to me or leave it on the back table and I'll pick it up.
Yeah, and there's pens back there. We have a lot of pens, so feel free.
Just take them. Thanks, you guys.
Yeah.
You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.